At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices. Plus, extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. And up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What an interesting week for the Detroit Lions and the New York Giants. Two physical joint practices and a preseason game in damp conditions at MetLife Stadium. Here today, Patricia Trania and John Macaroon to recap what an interesting week it was. Lots of information to gather, even from a preseason game that took place, a victory by the Giants. Patricia, first, let's start with the joint practices. It was hot. It was sweltering. I think everybody kind of went into the joint practices looking at the two teams as maybe being a little bit more friendly toward each other because of the relationship between Brian Daboll and Dan Campbell. The league beforehand has basically sent memos out to teams to say, hey, all the fisticuffs, all the violence, that's not what we're looking for. But across the league, it wasn't just the Lions and Giants. I mean, I think the footage that may change the preseason is NFL Network is airing live and you see a Seattle Seahawks player, DK Metcalf, taking his helmet and whacking a player over the head. So these joint practices have become physical. It was clear that the Giants were frustrated by what happened in Detroit at Allen Park last year, and they came out to really bully and test the Detroit Lions. And I think they made a statement as well. The Detroit Lions didn't back down. I'm just curious, what did you make of the physicality? Did you like it? Did it disrupt practice too much? From my perspective, being that I haven't covered joint practices too many times, my third occasion, I just thought that it was a little bit intriguing, a little bit nice to see some physicality by two teams, but it did get distracting at times.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, look, the weather was really, really bad. I mean, you stepped outside, and the second you stepped outside, you started sweating buckets. I mean, so when you're hot and you have, you know, 40 plus pounds of equipment on and you're going through cardio and you know, whatnot, tempers are going to be a little shorter than usual. I think that's fair to say. And I think that's what we saw. There's a very fine line between being physical and just being foolish. Foolish is when, you know, you just go when you look to hurt somebody, because you want to be, you're going rogue. And I think Dan Campbell had spoken about that, that he had a couple guys that went rogue on them in that first day of practice. And you can't have that because it does disrupt the practice. And as we saw on Tuesday, practice ended, like, I think it was, they cut short the practice by a period because they had to keep stopping practice because of all the little fights that were going on. And you know, you just can't have that because, look, you fight on a football field, that's a 15-yard penalty, a possible ejection, and you end up hurting your team. So you got to find a fine line between being physical, being tough, and being smart. And, you know, at times during those practices, that line was crossed.
Yeah, no doubt it was. And it was interesting because many of us thought maybe Tuesday would be a little bit less physical, a little bit more in terms of, hey, get the football work in. But nope, Kirby Joseph swinging on Malik Nabers, they were jawing back and forth. And like you said, practice did end early, which I think the media was pretty happy with that because it was so hot. Mm-hmm. And people were kind of thinking, okay, if the practice was going to run maybe one or two more periods, then the benches could clear and we could have a full-on two rosters fighting each other. That's how sweltering and that's how much tensions were heated. And the Giants, I think, came in looking to avenge what happened last year. There was talk all into the season regarding what that meant in terms of getting bullied around by the Lions last year. The Giants didn't have a good season. And I think the Giants really showed well, and as well as the Lions in terms of how they performed in regards to certain aspects, certain units shining. But before we get into the football, I'm curious. I want to talk about the two head coaches. You had a chance to have some FaceTime with Dan Campbell. Brian Daboll kind of now is taking reins of the offense. In the preseason game, people noticed the way in which he was holding his play calling sheet. A lot of questions regarding now that he's going to take over the play calling duties. What's that going to mean for the Giants? Dan Campbell is not calling plays, but he's an offensive mind that has learned under Sean Payton. So really two interesting coaches, two different styles of presenting information to the media. Brian Daboll, much more of the Nick Saban, Bill Belichick style. Let's just keep it short and sweet. Really, honestly, it's some coaches take that tact. They don't want narratives formed from the media. They just want to present the answer the questions and keep it moving. So basically, it's a little bit unusable for a lot of information for the media. Whereas Dan Campbell is a little bit more open, where his personality shines through. This is not saying one style is right or the other. It's just easier for the media to use the information from Dan Campbell than it is from Coach Brian Daboll. But I'm curious, what was it like talking to Dan Campbell? You have covered him. I'm curious your assessment now from the outside, seeing a coach now that's kind of risen through the ranks, had some success, and is now taking a football team like the Lions that has Super Bowl aspirations. Do you see a coach in Dan Campbell that can kind of continue to kind of maybe enter into that Kyle Shanahan, Andy Reid aura of like, hey, these are coaches that can win at the very highest levels of NFL football?
Well, I think when you're talking, excuse me, Andy Reid and Kyle Shanahan, they call their own plays. And I don't think Dan Campbell is that kind of guy. Now, I did cover him when he was with the Giants. He was a third round draft pick, I believe it was, in 1999. And believe it or not, he was very quiet and reserved when he was a player here. I got to know him. You know, we would talk about, you know, Texas barbecues and where were the best barbecue places whenever we'd go down to Dallas. We'd talk about rodeos, all kinds of cool stuff. But you could always sense in Dan Campbell that he had that fire burning in him. Like there was much more to him than just this polite, quiet Texan, this gentle giant that he was. And you can always tell. And on the field, he was quite the player. He was one of my favorite players to watch. And I was heartbroken when he went to the Cowboys, but I kind of knew that that's what he was going to do, being from Texas and everything like that. So when he showed up as a coach, you know what? He always struck me as an old school type. And I think you're seeing that now in his coaching style. He is all about, you know, physicality. He's all about playing smart. He's not afraid to push guys. There are some coaches that run country clubs during training camp. He is not one of them. There are some coaches who are afraid to kind of say what's on their mind. I don't think Dan is one of them. Dan will tell you exactly what he's thinking. And, you know, if it ruffles your feathers, then too bad. So I like how Dan Campbell has developed as a coach. I always knew he would be a good one if given the opportunity and the right environment in which to operate. But again, you know, you talk Andy Reid, you talk Kyle Shanahan, those guys kind of have their fate more in their hands than Dan Campbell. Dan Campbell is what we call a CEO style head coach. And there's nothing wrong with it. I actually prefer CEO style head coaches who basically just manage everything and don't get involved in the play calling. Now that said, as you mentioned, Brian Daboll is involved in the play calling now this year. And that's fine given where the Giants are at. You know, there are people that can do it and they can be successful. So Dan Campbell, if he ever decides to call plays, and I think that'll be down the line, I think he'd be good at it. But right now he's just not there because I don't think he was ever an offensive coordinator prior to becoming a head coach. So that would be not like a step back per se, but it does take, you know, some experience to balance that and to balance being a head coach. And I don't know if that necessarily is in his future.
Yeah. Now, when you look at from the Giants perspective, you look at Brian Daboll and you see some of the moves that were made in the offseason and the draft. You bring in Malik Nabers. Is the offense kind of moving toward a little bit more in terms of trying to be a little bit more explosive, a little bit more emphasis on the passing game now that Saquon has departed and you add Malik Nabers, who really shined? Is Brian Daboll now taking over the play calling. Do you think that's an advantage or a disadvantage from the Giants' perspective? Because you can look at it from a multitude of angles. You look at Brian Daboll, obviously a coach that has worked with some of the game's great quarterbacks, a previous offensive coordinator with Buffalo. That's how he made his name. But the offense for the Giants kind of hasn't, at least from last year, did not take the strides forward that many people would thought from the year prior. So what's your reaction to Brian Daboll calling the plays and what kind of success he can have calling the Giants offensive plays?
Yeah. You know what? I'm fine with it because look, despite what they say, the offense you see is Brian Daboll's system. It's his philosophies, his beliefs and whatnot. And no disrespect to Mike Kafka, the offensive coordinator who was calling the plays the first 2 years, but he might not think the same way Daboll does in certain situations. So it's kind of like, you know, if I create a how-to manual about how to build a widget and I know exactly how I want that widget built in my mind, and then I give it to you and I say, okay, here, John, you build it, but you follow my philosophy. Well, you're going to have your own takes on how to build the widget, you know? So it might turn out to be different than what I envision. So Daboll, you know, and again, this is a critical third year for the Giants. So by Daboll's taking on the play calling, and oh, by the way, let's not forget Daniel Jones is in the equation because this is a make or break season for him. So right now the Giants by having, you know, by Daboll calling the plays, they have done everything conceivable to make it so that Daniel Jones can succeed. And also so that the team can turn it around. And that is the hope, I think, behind that. And it's not a surprise. I mean, I kind of figured that was the direction it was going to go in at the end of last season. And Daboll hasn't made it official, but we all know that that's where they're going.
Understood. And so before we get into the preseason game, a 14-3 unthrilling contest. But look, there's some things that for both teams that obviously we're going to discuss, obviously the quarterbacks, the struggles that the backups did have. But I'm curious your overall thoughts on the preseason. I entered into it, obviously, with a little bit more enthusiasm than many others would be because, like I said, I haven't covered too many preseason games and things like that on the road. So going into it, I'm excited. And then all of a sudden you start recognizing, oh, it's a damp, drizzly game. And you recognize, oh yes, the cognition comes in. Oh yeah, these are second and third stringers. A lot of the starters aren't gonna play. And the play on the field was really tough in the first half. And then, you know, after the game, a 14-3 game, people are talking and evaluating the preseason. And many people clearly pay attention closely to the joint practices, and teams obviously, I think, get a lot of benefit from that. But in terms of the preseason, it is an opportunity to look at depth battles and players that are battling for the roster. It may not translate to quality football so much on the field, but I'm just curious, would you, because you hear a lot of different things from a lot of different people, would you be in favor of just scrapping the preseason games and just doing 20 game season, or just one preseason game and an 18 game schedule? Because there's so many arguments you can make in terms of, hey, how do these young players showcase what they can do? How do we get a Tommy DeVito to make some plays and make some noise? How do we get a Hendon Hooker to get out there on the field and have a drive where you can evaluate what he does if you don't have preseason games? Because a lot of times now these joint practices, you can get a lot of good work, but there's also distractions with all the aggression and two teams basically unloading on each other. There's a lot of times where there's distractions and things that can go astray with joint practices. What's your best take on how the NFL can handle the preseason? Because the game was tough to watch and it did get tedious a little bit after halftime.
Yeah, I think, you know, what a lot of people tend to forget, and I get the perspective like, oh, you show up and you expect to see Malik Nabers, you expect to see Bobby Okereke and Dexter Lawrence if you're a Giant fan, you expect to see Jared Goff, you know, and Amon St. Brown if you're a Lion fan. But you got to remember what the purpose of preseason games is. No matter how much a coach tries, you cannot simulate a game environment in practice. The quarterback can't be touched, for example, in practice. He can be touched in the game, but he can't be touched in practice. So now, you know, if you're working on timing and issues like that, how are you supposed to perfect that? You know, so you kind of need that game speed to really, you know, fine tune some of that. And then the other thing, and I make this announcement every year before the start of the preseason to my followers and to my readers, I say, remember, the score doesn't matter. I don't care if you know, it ends up being 100-0. You know, what you want to look for is the competitiveness. You want to look at the guys that, you know, how do they perform given their snaps? Because again, you're playing at game speed. You're not working at practice where, oh, we don't want anybody on the ground. Well, how are you supposed to work on tackling? So based on that, I don't think I would want to see the preseason games go away. Now, I think we all can agree that the NFL is pushing for an 18-game schedule, which probably will mean a 2-game exhibition season. I'm old enough to remember when it used to be 6 exhibition games and training camp would start in like July. And that's the other thing we have to take into consideration. You know, are they going to get rid of the OTAs and the spring work and just make training camp longer next year? That's something that I don't think anybody's really been talking about of late. So that's going to factor in. But yeah, I would say, you know, if it were up to me, I would say if we have to compromise, do 18 games, 2 preseason games, and maybe change up the rules a little bit to allow for maybe more padded practices.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
A little bit more physical work because you just can't simulate that in practice. You got to do that in the game.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what Dan Campbell had kind of reiterated when I asked him about his thoughts on the 18 game. He said, look, it's, you know, he'll always go with the flow of what the league is interested in doing. But at the same token, he does feel for guys that are on the lower end of the depth chart that are trying to battle that also can, you know, gain experience and can find spots on practice squads and develop. So there's always that, you know, yin and yang of trying to, you know, balance how many games versus the need for players to develop. So that was real interesting. But in the game, clearly, obviously, it was influenced by the conditions. It was real rainy, damp, overcast at MetLife Stadium. But I think some of the early takeaways that I think, at least from the Lions' perspective and maybe the Giants as well, is the play of the backups. Drew Lock threw the interception, didn't kind of have the best showing that many people would have expected, and then leaves the field now. He left the field injured, and so the Giants are going to potentially be now seeking another backup. Tommy DeVito really had a nice showing, moved the football a little bit. The running back, Gray, really took advantage of an opportunity to get out there on the field and torch the Lions' defense. From the Lions' perspective, the talk and the quite elevated concern now has started regarding the backup. And it's clear, everybody understands that if the starter of any NFL team goes down, it's just real hard-pressed to expect that the backup is going to come in. I know that Tom Brady was the ultimate hero story, and everybody kind of wants to recreate that. The unsung hero that comes in and just leads the football team to heights unknown. It's not very likely, but everybody has that dream scenario. But talk amongst the league and fans is about backups. And in Detroit, coming, one of the big takeaways is Nate Sudfeld really kind of set off a lot of alarms based on his play. Didn't move the football well, looked a little bit shaky, had the turnover, but the Lions did get the football back because the Giants fumbled it back to the Lions. But it seemed like this game kind of really emphasized kind of a look at the quarterbacks, and for Detroit, Hendon Hooker clearly leaving the game with a concussion. And now for Detroit, it's going to be, okay, what do you do behind Jared Goff? Because you have a Super Bowl caliber team, you have a great offensive line and solid offensive weapons. What do you do behind Jared Goff? Do you stick with Nate Sudfeld because of his experience, his close relationship with Jared Goff? Do you allow Hendon Hooker to be the backup, even though he's been shaky, even though he led a nice drive? So that's been the talk here in Detroit, is with the backups, it's very concerning because both quarterbacks, in terms of Hendon Hooker, only got 20 reps, and Nate Sudfeld, who didn't play well, it's put that position in the spotlight here in Detroit. What was it like from the Giants' perspective? Obviously, the fan base still clearly, there's an energy and a buzz regarding DeVito, and I get a sense that with Drew Lock leaving, that puts DeVito back in the spotlight.
Well, Drew Lock looks like he's going to miss some practice time. He's got a strained oblique and a hip pointer. So the NFL Network was first out with the report, which you know, I've since had confirmed that he's going to miss some time. So the Giants are probably going to have to sign another backup quarterback. And I think I wrote down three names, Jacob Eason, Matt Barkley, and I think Nathan Peterman, all of whom have had exposure to Brian Daboll's system, whether it be with Buffalo or with the Giants. So we'll see if one of those three becomes, you know, it gets signed. Because the Giants, you know, they need a third quarterback to get through the rest of camp. I made this point on my podcast. I don't understand why there just wasn't more of a clear-cut competition for the number two quarterback for the Giants. I mean, Tommy DeVito has the most experience of the two in the system. He has shown he can win games. Now, you know, he was a rookie last year. Did he hold the ball too long at times? Yes. But he showed that the game wasn't too big for him. And I just, when they signed Drew Lock, I mean, I didn't hate the move, but I thought, well, gosh, why not just have a competition and let the two of them slug it out and don't automatically assume that, okay, Tommy DeVito now is on the bubble. He might not make the roster. He's automatically going to be number three. Coaches say all the time, we want competition, and yet contracts dictate whether or not there's competition. And I just didn't get that. And, you know, now DeVito has an opportunity to move into that number two spot, depending on how long Drew Lock is sidelined. And again, his game's not perfect. It's gotten a little bit better from last year, still needs some work. But why not give this guy, continue to invest in him and develop him and give him that opportunity to maybe be that number two guy behind Jones?
No doubt. From the perspective of evaluating young players in Detroit, many people really gravitate toward the cornerbacks that were drafted by the Lions. Clearly a revamped defense that needs to showcase that they can kind of go out there and help the football team in a different way. Last year, the passing defense was really not up to par and maybe even could have been costly in the Lions' run to potentially the Super Bowl in the game against the 49ers. And so clearly Ennis Rakestraw in that first series made a case for why the Lions looked at what he's all about. I mean, he's a young, energetic player. He's, you know, clearly has a now tight friendship and bond with Tyrion Arnold, Detroit's first round pick. So I thought that Ennis Rakestraw really jumped out, especially on special teams. I thought that he really, week in, week out, in terms of the first couple weeks of training camp, has really made some plays, especially when the pads came on. And then you look at it from the offensive side, I thought Sione Vaki, the running back, kind of made some impactful plays, put his foot in the ground, and helped an offense move the football a little bit when it was stagnant. Like we said, that the conditions were tough, and you looked at it from a Lions offensive perspective, it wasn't all that fruitful in terms of scoring points, but you got an opportunity from Detroit side to see the kicker make a 53-yarder at MetLife. People were here in Detroit are clamoring, hell, why did Dan Campbell go for it on fourth down when you have a kicker that you just throw out there and see what he can do? But I just think that the conditions at MetLife, you know, kicking from 55 plus would have been very treacherous. So I think that he was very comfortable seeing the kicker, the only kicker in camp, make a 53-yarder, the only points that Detroit scored. But two young players from Detroit side that stood out were defensive back Ennis Rakestraw and running back Sione Vaki. From the Giants side, which young players maybe stood out or have now been written in your notebook as players to watch moving forward?
Yeah, I think the running backs were the star of the game for the Giants. I mean, coming in, I kind of thought that maybe Tyrone Tracy was in the lead for RB2 behind starter Devin Singletary. Eric Gray had himself a night, so I don't think you can now say that. So he really looked good. On the defensive side of the ball, the young linebacker, Deontay Johnson, who has had a strong camp, looked good. Unfortunately, he has an ankle injury now. He's going to be week to week, so I don't know what that means for his prospects, but he looked good. Flipping back to the offensive side of the ball, The line, the offensive line was a big question mark coming in. And they held up pretty well, I thought, you know, all things considered, you know, a couple of gaffes here and there. But for the most part, there weren't any like OMG moments, if you will. So that was encouraging. And just, you know, the young cornerbacks, that's a position that obviously, you know, if you're following the Giants, you want to see how that shapes up because, you know, I don't think they have cornerback two set. And I believe Nick McCloud did not play. He's been competing for that position. Cordell Flott, I think, had a quad injury. So I don't think he played in that game. So that still needs to be resolved between now and the time they make final roster cuts.
Yeah, no doubt. I'm curious your opinion on this new wave of mobile quarterbacks, because now you've been covering Daniel Jones, now kind of more of a prototypical passer. Detroit has Jared Goff. But the league is moving towards more athletic quarterbacks, because really the reason clearly is defensive backs, defensive linemen are quicker, faster, stronger. Linebackers, defenders are just able to disrupt plays with a little bit more efficacy. So now you have these quarterbacks that are a little bit more athletic, that can move the ball. Clearly, you see DeVito can move the pocket a little bit. It just opens up the offense for a lot of these coordinators to do more things, and they love that. More options against these treacherous defenses with great coordinators. But then you look at it from Detroit's perspective, they're clamoring for a player like Hendon Hooker, who is a young player. Now, not to replace Jared Goff, but they can see a little bit of what he brings to the table. You see a drive in which he moves the football, can move the pocket. If he faces pressure, he can kind of evade defenders and make throws. And he led a drive that eventually stalled out. But then now the other side of the coin drops, in which he gets hurt. You know, he has the truck stick moment. Everybody's happy. But then as a result of the increased physicality and battling defensive backs, he then leaves into the medical tent and eventually is diagnosed with a concussion. So that's the other side of it, is that these quarterbacks that run open themselves up to injury. What do you make of this new wave of quarterback? And, you know, you look at it and you say, do you just need a little bit of athleticism to be able to keep it moving? Or do you say, you know what, pocket passers are still underrated, that they can do a bunch of different things? Because here in Detroit, we're getting that sense and that evaluation that, hey, Hendon Hooker has additional tools, but at the same token, leaves the game with an injury.
Yeah, I mean, I'm old school. I've always preferred the pure pocket passers. Don't forget, I had, 16 years of Eli Manning, mm-hmm. who was a statue back there. And, you know, he won a few games, as I recall, you know, including a couple of Super Bowls. Mm-hmm. But no, I totally understand, you know, the gravitation towards the mobile quarterback and how that allows you to do much more. I think what happens, though, is you get these quarterbacks, and Daniel Jones is a perfect example of this. You have to know when to say when and live to see the next down. And all too often, sometimes these quarterbacks, they feel, okay, things aren't going well, so it's on me to make the play. And they try and push and squeeze out an extra yard or two. And that's when they leave themselves open to the big hit. Because once you take off with the ball in your hands, you are no longer protected. You are now a runner. And you have to know, okay, there's a big 300-pound guy coming at me. I better slide and get down. So if he touches me, it's on them. It's not on me. And sometimes you don't see that all the time. And that's what leads to injuries. That's why, you know, I think I would not be surprised if more and more teams start to keep three quarterbacks because of that, especially teams that whose starters are mobile. So, you know, I get the fascination with mobile quarterbacks. Me personally, I'm old school. Give me a pocket passer any day, but I also know that those are kind of going the way of the dinosaur.
Yeah, no doubt. And that's kind of the interesting part too, is that's the quarterback the Lions are choosing to develop and hoping can be the backup to Jared Goff. But it's been a little bit shaky throughout training camp, but you see glimpses. It's just now, from Detroit's perspective, seeing it a little bit more on a regular basis as he progresses through training camp. All right, one last thought here before we exit this week. What are the storylines that the Giants are going to follow now after preseason week one? For the Lions, unfortunately, they kind of came away from this week a little bit injury plagued. Unfortunately, two players left with concussions. We lost an offensive lineman in Connor Galvin with a torn MCL. He'll miss a big chunk, I think all of the 2024 season. And so you look at it from the Lions perspective, a little bit beaten up, but back to the drawing board in terms of now looking at the evaluation of the backups and the second stringers along the offensive line. They're going to need a little bit more from players that they're counting on to battle for opportunities to make this roster. You look at it now moving forward from the Lions perspective, it's about continuing their growth on defense, gelling, and incorporating players that return from injury, continuing to evaluate Marcus Davenport, what he can bring, James Houston on the edge there opposite of Aiden Hutchinson, and clearly hoping that Hendon Hooker does not miss too much time as his development is key. Moving forward for Detroit, it's always going to continue to involve, hey, making sure that the secondary, the new revamped secondary led by Carlton Davis and Amik Robertson continue to gel with the rookies. And you're starting to see glimpses of, okay, you know what? You can kind of start to see what this defense can be about. And you hope that those that have shined early from the defense, like a Levi Onwuzurike, can continue their progress. The biggest question mark is going to be at wide receiver. They didn't show themselves well against the Giants. The likes of a Darius Fountain only got targeted 3 times, no catches. Isaiah Williams made Dan Campbell's list of players that impressed. But the key situation is going to be who's going to be consistent at wide receiver 3 and 4 in Detroit. And so moving forward from Detroit's perspective, it's going to be about, hey, who are the players that are going to step up as camp progresses?
Yeah, from the Giants' perspective, I think, you know, preseason game 2, we're going to see the starters. We didn't see the starters, like I said, in 1. And that was because they got quality work in the joint practices. So, you know, how is the first team offense with Daniel Jones running it going to look? How is that Jones to Malik Nabers connection? Malik Nabers actually played a few snaps against the Lions, but they didn't hit him because, you know, for whatever the reason, either the quarterback didn't see him or he, you know, something was going on in the coverage or whatever. So we'll take a look at that. Obviously take a look at the defensive side of the ball, you know, so it's really going to be, I don't know if dress rehearsal is the right word to use, but this is as close as possible to what you may see in the regular season, minus the game planning, of course. And, you know, we've seen this now for what, almost 3 weeks in practices. We've seen how the first team offense and first team defense have looked, and, you know, can they keep that up in the game? Because like I said before, the game environment is a totally different and a faster and different environment. So that's one of the storylines. Obviously injuries is another one, you know, for the Giants. Are they going to get John Michael Schmitz, their center, who's missed like, I think 10 practices now. Is he going to be ready to go? Because at some point that the Giants have to make a decision on the starting offensive line. That's kind of been on hold because of this Schmitz injury. You know, cornerback too, I mentioned that as being something that needs to be sorted out. The running back depth needs to be sorted out. The kickoff returner, you know, they played with a couple of different guys. You know, who's going to be the guy going forward, or maybe they're going to do a duel. Who we'll see. So many question marks. And then, you know, you've got the bottom of the depth chart at receiver, tight end. What are they going to do there? You know, Lawrence Cager, who had been projected as tight end 3, he's dealing with a hammy. So is he going to be good to go, or do they maybe go with a blocker? So just, you know, still a lot of question marks that need to be resolved for the Giants, not just this week, but beyond.
Yeah, no doubt. Enjoy the conversation with Patricia Traina from Giants on SI. I'm John Macaroon. Make sure all year long you stick with Sports Illustrated's NFL team channels, Giants on SI and the Detroit Lions on SI, as we bring you videos, highlights, analysis, in-depth insider coverage of two NFL teams that are looking to make their mark in the NFC. It was a great week in East Rutherford, my first time in New Jersey. Always good to check back in New York as well. Got my chance now to see MetLife Stadium and what that was all about. I survived the entire experience. It was great. It was a preseason week filled with aggression, fun coverage of an NFL team. And Patricia, it was nice to finally meet you in person. And now we get an opportunity to watch these two football teams as they progress. I've enjoyed this week's podcast and having an opportunity to break down a different team from an insider's perspective. It was a very fun week.
Yeah, it was a pleasure meeting you. It was a pleasure collaborating with you. And I'm sure we'll do this again next year.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.